notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills!
That was from the movie Zoolander, 2001. The website Know Your Meme explains this. It says, quote, "The phrase, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills, occurs when the fashion designer Jacoby Mugatu, played by Will Ferrell, finally expresses his frustration at the fact no one else in the fashion world has noticed Derek Zoolander's, played by Ben Stiller, supposedly career-defining runway looks are nothing more than him pulling the same face over and over again. Since the film's release, the phrase has been used to describe vexation when the common consensus appears to go against common sense, or when an unexpected, straightforward situation is greeted by a surprise outcome." Unquote. The world is full of these crazy pills situations. Like when you have a mental health problem and the world expects you to simply pretend not to have one. Or when you lose your job and therefore lose your health insurance. It's mental dissonance. Just makes you feel like,
doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills!
How about this one? You're a skilled and successful actor, but then you put on a couple of pounds and you no longer get to work at this thing you're really good at, even though weight has nothing to do with acting ability. It's sexist and it's unjust, and the dissonance of it all can mess with your head. It's Depression Mode. I'm John Moe. I'm glad you're here. You might have seen Lola Kirk on screen before. She played Haley Rutledge, an oboist and the series lead on the Amazon series Mozart in the Jungle. She was Tracy, a college freshman and lead character in the film Mistress America with Greta Gerwig. She played a major role in the movie Gone Girl. During COVID, Lola says she put on a few pounds and has been unable to get much acting work since. And that can mess with your mind. Fiercely. And any kind of stress or depression or anxiety that you might already have just gets whipped up even more. Lola's two sisters are both performers. Her sister Jemima Kirk is an actor. Her sister Domino is a singer. Their father, Simon Kirk, has played drums for the band Bad Company since 1973. Was formerly in a band called Free. Lola is also a singer. She's put out several well-received albums. The music industry is just as image-obsessed as the film industry, of course, even though music has no images. Lola Kirk's latest album is Lady for Sale. Here's some of the title track. Lola Kirk, welcome to Depression Mode.
Thank you. Good to be here.
The new album, Lady for Sale, what's the album about?
Oh, God. The album is about exploding your life because you are filled with desire for something that you imagine will make your life better and will solve all of your problems. It's about obsession. It's about falling in love. It's about getting what you want and realizing that it didn't really do it. It didn't change everything. And then the title track on the record, Lady for Sale, is about how humbling and difficult it can be to pursue a life as an artist. And I think that those things are aligned because, at least in my life, I have always looked at something outside myself, be it romance or work, to kind of make me whole. So I was like, even though this whole album seems to be about this theme of love and romance, like, how can I kind of make it, put this one song that's about work as the title track? And I was like, oh, because it's all about just, like, you know, trying to find the thing that fixes everything.
And is that from personal experience, this idea that if I could just get this one other thing, then everything else will fall into place?
Oh, yeah. That's definitely a part of my life.
We're going deep right off the bat here, Lola.
I know,
Kirk.
There's
we're
no
not messing
small
around
talk with me.
No, I'm sorry. But that's something you've run across yourself?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely I was raised in a household in which the external was the thing. How beautiful you were was important. How respected you were by the world was important. There was a lot about like looks. So it was only kind of natural that I would bring that into my own life. I wanted my life to look a certain way. And that way, I think that perfection eluded me. So I don't know. I struggle with that. I struggle with that a lot. But I'm so grateful to have an outlet to make work about it.
Yeah. When you talk about the living up to something and kind of, is it like a female beauty standard? Is it a fashion thing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel so fat right now and it's like driving me insane. And it's not true. Or even if it is true, it doesn't really matter. I don't know. I feel like there was a lot of body image stuff in my house growing up and a lot of eating disorders. And I didn't have one. And I kind of like ate defiantly throughout my life. I was like, oh, look, like I don't care about like the way I look, blah, 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 which was very lucky. I mean, because it's not just it wasn't just in my family. It was around me. I mean, I grew up in New York and, you know, just kind of adjacent to so many kind of cultural events and things that were seen around the world. But I know that, you know, eating disorders affect body image stuff affects people everywhere. But anyway, it was only when I got a little older that really during COVID, my team that I work with was like, you gain too much weight. You're meant to be a leading lady. You're not a character actress. And it was so horrible to hear that. And it really got into my head and I hadn't noticed. I mean, it was COVID. I was just kind of eating whatever I wanted. And that was like the beginning of a kind of obsession for me about food, which is interesting because I feel like obsession will sometimes drive people to make changes in their life. But it didn't really do that to me. I was just kind of eating the same and hating myself for it. But I did make a workout video, actually, is like my way. I did make that.
I definitely want to get to the workout video because I find it fascinating in so many ways.
Oh, well, I'm so glad.
Your team, you said. That's an interesting term. What is your team?
Oh, that's just what people in the biz call agents and managers. And
okay.
And look, their job is to make me money. And I love the people I work with. And what makes money is thinness. I mean, I spend a lot of time watching TV looking for bodies that make me feel okay about mine instead of bodies that make me feel like I hate my body. And I don't see that many. And so there was this part of me that was like, what if I'm the actress with a pot belly and is still a romantic lead, or, you know, the actress whose arms aren't totally toned and is still this way. And I understand and appreciate how ludicrous it is for me to even say these things because, you know, a lot of people look at me and go, she's thin. And a lot of people look at me and go, she's not as well. I mean, it depends really where you are, or who you are and how fucked up you are. But I think that I've spoken to people that have like seen my work and stuff who have said like, oh, thank you. You made me feel good about being me. And in a way I'm like, fuck, I don't want that. But like at the same time, that's all I want as an artist. I want to make the world a more beautiful place and to make you feel more beautiful about things that feel really ugly to you, because that's what real art has done to me. I don't want to contribute to the anxiety of mankind by being impossibly thin.
Mm. So when you talk about contributing to the beauty of the world, are you talking about having a relatable image or relatable weight?
Yes, I'm not talking about eugenics. I'm talking about...
I always thought maybe it was through your work.
Well, both of those things. I mean, and I think that, yes, through my work, absolutely. I mean, writing songs and playing parts and stories and writing anything, I don't know, like singing, all of that is about beauty. But I think that there's another kind of beauty that when you have an image that's really tied to your work, especially now when you kind of have to as an artist, you know, you have to be on social media. I mean, you don't have to be, but it gives opportunities to your work to be experienced because that's just the world we live in. Do I want to kind of be aspirational? I put that in quotes. And I guess if you're a podcast, you can't hear it, like aspirational, like you could look like this. Or do I want to be relatable? And I'm always honestly relieved when I see artists and I'm like, oh, they like gained weight and they're like still like hot and they don't look like, I don't know. It's always nice to me. And I just didn't grow up like seeing people look like regular people.
What do you mean?
I don't know. I mean, I look back at 90s movies and I'm like, wow, like, was everyone anorexic or did everyone just like naturally lose weight? And they're like, that's the other thing. I'm like, they were anorexic. No, totally.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I'm naturally gaining weight as I get older. And I'm like, fuck. But then I like look around and I'm like, everyone else seems to go like the opposite direction. Like, what's wrong with me? I actually did do a 23andMe or one of those genetics kits. And it was like, The only thing that I didn't know about my ancestry was that it was like, you will naturally gain weight as you get older. And I was like, is that really something that I needed to know? But you know what? I would love to feel totally comfortable with that. And I feel like I could. It's just really brutal out there.
Yeah. I've pulled up pictures on Google image search of Bad Company and Free, which are the bands that your father played and plays drums in. And these are not cover boy models. These are very talented musicians, but it doesn't seem like there's any pressure on them to be absolutely gorgeous. Did that ever enter your mind of like, oh, okay, women, you know, me and my sisters and girls in society are expected to be gorgeous, but here are successful artists who just look like blokes.
Yeah, I mean, that's so interesting because my conception of my father, and maybe it was because of the way my mother looked at him, was that he was God's gift to mankind. And I don't know. I mean, yeah, there's like some shirtless pics of him on there that I think like, you know, because he was a drummer. So it's like
good upper body muscles.
Always get it.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, I think like my dad's like relationship to himself was very like, he was a Casanova. So I didn't conceive of him as just like a bloke.
Uh-huh.
And I think I've idealized men in rock bands, you know, the scraggly looking, whatever, least I used to be like, oh my God, that's the male ideal right there. Like long hair looks like shit. Like give it to me. But yes, I think that the standards on men and women are increasingly the same. There was an article I read a couple months ago in the New York Times about like, these boys who want to become fitness influencers, and they're like teenage boys, and they are like skipping meals or like protein loading or carb load, whatever, like because TikTok has like created this impossible standard for men's bodies now, which I'm sure was always present to a certain degree, but I think because of social media is just emphasized radically. So it was interesting to me like to grow up around children of musicians, like that era of musicians, because I was like, they're all fucking gorgeous. And it was because these rock stars married these supermodels and created these like, you know, incredible looking children. So yeah, I was like, why is everybody just like amazing looking? And I was like, oh, right, because there is this kind of, I don't know, it's not an accident.
Yeah, supermodel faces and guitarist arms all over.
Yes,
the place.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so then it's funny, we're talking about this, the idea of body image and the idea of what you need to look like professionally in order to get work that people want you to get.
Mm-hmm.
And then here comes Lola Kirk with an album entitled Lady for Sale. And is the song or album meant to be about like this kind of commodification?
Absolutely. I mean, as I said, a lot of the album is thematically about exploding your life and trying to find, you know, love and answers and love and being dissatisfied and whatever. But then I didn't feel like I'd really put out a record in this climate without addressing this incredibly problematic element of what it is to be part of the culture now, which is, and probably always, but I think it's really, really like clear now that you have to commodify yourself in order to stand a chance to be part of the conversation, unless someone is really doing it for you. or unless you don't really care, which I would love to get to that place rather than the one where, you know, I'm just part of a machine that does it for me. But a lot of the promotion at this point falls on the artist, even if you have a wonderful label as I do and a great team as I do. It's just the way it works. Promote, make yourself into a brand. I mean, what a crazy idea. I feel like it was like in the last 10 years that I even heard the word, like, what's your brand? We're rebranding. We're doing this.
Yeah,
I was just like, when did human beings become brands? very, very strange.
Well, and I often reach out to, in these interviews, to people who are performers, especially people putting out products under their own names, like even more than being in a band, you know, you have albums out there as Lola Kirk, and that is, that is your actual name. And like, we are in an era when a lot of people, whether it's just a matter of putting their favorite vacation photos on Facebook so it looks like their family has their shit together a lot more than it does. But how do you separate Lola Kirk, the brand, the, you know, the occupation, the career, from Lola Kirk, the human being?
Well, I think I've been lucky in a way to not have the kind of success I always desired. And not that I haven't had great success, because I have. But I didn't kind of skyrocket overnight to this level of fame that I do think is not for the faint of heart. And even, you know, like, I think fame is an incredibly destructive force. And I think it needs to begin to be realized as that, instead of this thing that we want. Like, there's almost something sacrificial about fame. I think it eats people alive. And I've begun to kind of be like, you know, why, like, who gets famous? Like, what does it, what, like, because I don't know, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, fame is bad. It is not a good thing. It is not a good thing. And I think it can make good people into bad people. And I know very few famous people that have, like, really fucking retained their, like, sense of true self. But all this is to say, like, I spent my whole life wanting that. I believed that that would be the thing that, like, made me better. And when I've just kind of achieved, like, a lot of career goals without this, like, other thing, like, I mean, I can walk around literally anywhere. Nobody is stopping me. I mean, and if people do, they're really nice. Like, no, it's just like, oh, I liked your show, or you're cool. And I'm like, thank you. That's really nice. But yeah, I think that there has been this kind of organic way in which I've been able to distinguish me as, like, you know, a brand or an artist or whatever, and me as my sad self. But there's also this choice for me in my music, which, you know, I particularly for this record, I really wanted to make a character. I wanted the Lola Kirk Lady for Sale record to be this kind of, like, Janie Fricke record, or something that you could, like, find, like, something like it was like a forgotten 90s country act, or 80s country star, or something.
Just ahead, Lola Kirk says she was going for an 80s feel to her music. What could be more 80s than an aerobics workout video? Hike up those leg warmers and stay tuned. You know what I like? I like when things are easy. Man, easy things are just the best, because obviously there are plenty of parts of life already that can be very, very difficult. So bring on the easy. My favorite easy things, I have to admit, are when something seems like it would be difficult, but turns out to be easy. Oh, I love that. Case in point, building your own website and web presence with Squarespace. I did this years ago and found it to be delightfully simple. I can build a site, make changes, redesign everything if I want, all very simple. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. You don't need to be a web guru. You become the guru. Start a completely personalized website with the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint. You can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or business and optimized for every device. Make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. They accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. Upload video content, organize your video library, and showcase your content on beautiful video pages. You can even sell access to your video library by adding a paywall to your content. So why not get started now? Go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/depresh to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. squarespace.com/depresh.
This week, the greatest discovery becomes greatest trek.
That's because greatest trek is for way more than just discovery.
We're the hit show on Maximum Fun that covers all the new Star Trek shows. Lower Decks, Strange New Worlds, Picard, Prodigy, Discovery, and any other Star Trek show Paramount throws at us.
Come check it out for our funny and formative recaps of all the new stuff the Star Trek Industrial Complex churns out. It's in your podcatcher every Tuesday.
Subscribe to Greatest Trek. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation.
Back with Lola Kirk, for her new album Lady for Sale, she made a lengthy workout video that looks like something you'd find at a garage sale. Lola, in a leotard, being a fitness person.
Don't have weights? Try using wine bottles. Want something lighter? Cans of beans will work just fine. Roll up, grab your weights or wine bottles for kneeling marches, and join me on your shins. Step your right foot forward, ground into the four corners of your...
Everybody at that time, if they were like famous enough, tried their hand at a fitness video. Cindy Crawford, Jane Fonda, like... And so, when I made a fitness video, it wasn't like I was saying like, well, me too. I'm that way. It was kind of like I'm playing this character.
Yeah. Describe a little, because, you know, you go on YouTube looking for your Lola Kirk interviews. This is my experience. And then you find this 39-minute video of that's aerobics, and you're in 80s clothes. The cinematography on it is kind of grainy and camcorder-like. Why did you make it, and what were you hoping to do with it?
So when we were making the album and the studio, I just found myself moving a lot rhythmically, because it's a very... there's a lot of synths and there's a lot of beats on there or whatever. And I was like, oh, this would be like really fun to work out to. And at the time, I was just beginning to hear about this TikTok thing. Mm-hmm. And so in a way, I was like, oh, what if I made like a TikTok? Like, what? Honestly, I was like, maybe this is why the like album can fucking work, because now you have to go viral on TikTok to have streaming, to make money, and blah, blah, blah. It did not go viral on TikTok, but I am very proud. It was too cool. Uh-huh. But ultimately, the idea evolved from there. And I was like, oh my God, what if I made like a companion piece to the record, which is a workout video? And it can be a promotional tool. But also, I had discovered kind of the joy of working out through this horrible experience of being told that I was too fat to work in Hollywood as a leading lady. So I, kind of wanted to make something that could help other people feel really good in their body and feel empowered and feel like they didn't have to do all these other things in order to be healthy, like, starve themselves. And I loved the concept of it. I mean, I was doing the Jane Fonda workout for a while because I hated working out so much, but I loved Jane Fonda. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, the only way that I could stomach working out is if like Jane is the one leading me through the whole thing. So there were a lot of different factors that kind of came together, but ultimately it was just something I wanted to do and a character I wanted to play.
Mm-hmm. Who is the character?
I don't think I've had the opportunity to play a very like feminine woman in my roles. Like, I feel like I get cast a lot as like intelligent, which is not to say that intelligence and femininity are, separate at all, but like
more
cerebral, like cerebral or gay, I get cast as a lot, or kind of like rural. Uh-huh. So I like the idea of playing someone, and I get cast a lot as an assistant too, I've noticed. Hmm. I was like, oh, I want to be like the diva, like embodied, luxurious diva. That uh-huh. was like the role I wanted to play, because that's how that's a part of my personality, I feel like. I mean, I'm lots of things, as we all are, but that was just a part of me that I feel I never got to really like showcase. And I think that was something I wanted to come across both in the music and in the materials, like the videos that I was making, not just the workout video, but the other music videos too.
It's funny. I was watching and I was thinking, okay, is she being is she playing a starlet kind of thing, or is she making fun of the idea of stardom? And then I realized, oh, yes, to both. she is sort of pointing out the form even as she provides the content for the form.
Well, I thought it was very clever. Thank you. Oh, I really appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, definitely both. Both.
Yeah. Yes, both, please. I'll take one of each. Mm-hmm. I've seen articles about you that say, well, she has struggled a lot with eating disorders throughout her life, or, you know, a lot, you know, has dealt with eating disorders for a long time. And then I've also seen interviews, and I think you even mentioned here, where you kind of downplay the severity of that, or
well,
that it
no,
even
I didn't,
happened.
I've never had an eating disorder, but I grew up around it intensely. I was like the only person in my family.
Okay.
So I have definitely struggled with it, but not personally. Not until
you struggled with it in your family.
Yeah. I mean, I think that like any addiction or kind of compulsive behavior, something like that can affect everybody around it. I mean, watching somebody struggle with their body and be self-destructive, especially when those people are, you know, there to care for you, but they have an obsession with their own, you know, situation. It's hard to talk about this because in a way I don't feel, while it has been a part of my experience, it doesn't feel like it's necessarily mine to talk about. But watching other women hate their own bodies has really shaped me and how I relate to my body. For a long time, it made me feel like, okay, I'm going to just love my body. I felt quite resilient. But then as I got older, that shifted a little bit.
Well, when did that happen?
As I was saying, it happened, you know, during COVID when I put on weight and didn't really realize. And I was only able to put on weight and not realize because I was just like happy. I was just like, oh, yeah. I didn't, you know, I wasn't paying attention. Also, I was staying at my boyfriend's house and the only mirror he had was like, he's really tall. So the only mirror he had was like a face mirror and it was really high. So I would just look in the mirror and kind of smile and walk by and be like, oh, it wasn't until I got back to my apartment in New York that I tried to put my jeans on and they wouldn't go past my thighs. And I was like, oh, fuck. So I didn't know. I didn't notice. But yeah, that was when it really just began to be like, oh my God, well, I want to work. I want to work. I want to be an actress. I want to do these roles. So I guess I'll have to lose all this weight. And like, that just shouldn't be the reality. But that being said, you know, I love acting. I've spent a lot of time in my life developing these skills. And I'm confused about what to sacrifice, you know, like, do I diet so that I can continue to do this? Or do I pray that the industry changes and that women can look like anything?
Yeah, like people.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting, though, how like during this time where you were probably gaining some weight, that's when you describe yourself as being happy?
Oh, yeah. I give a fuck.
Yeah. And so like here, life gives you a fork in the road of like, pursue the thing that you've been successful at in your career and that you love, or do the thing that's making you happy. That's a hell of a fork in the road.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is so often what I see from people who devote their lives to any kind of industry, you know, is like that balance is really key. I was talking to my best friend as an actress, Marianne Rendon, and she and I were talking the other day and I was like, what are you up to? And she was like, I'm working on my life. And I was like, what the hell does that mean? And she was like, oh, it's just really important, you know, that I do these things that nurture my life as well as like these things that nurture my work. And I'd not heard somebody just like articulate it so clearly. Work on your life. It's important to not always be working. So I'm working on my life now too.
How's that going?
It's going well. It's going really well. I mean, I need to do it. I think sometimes the things that will remind you to work on your life are really, really painful. It doesn't feel welcome, but healing is, you know, what I need to do. And I think I've been denying that for a while. Like there have been wounds from my childhood around body and around stability. And there was a lot of addiction in my family of origin. And just seeing how I've played out those patterns in my own life as an adult. And I'm just beginning to really kind of take some steps so that I don't play those things out in my life any further.
Just ahead, so Lola Kirk wants to act. Hollywood says a leading lady needs a different body. So what does she do next?
Hey there, it's Annabelle Gurwitch.
And I'm Lara House. We host Tiny Victories, the 15-minute podcast that's about the little things.
Getting into the tiny victory frame of mind is about recognizing minor accomplishments and fleeting joys.
Isn't it a wonderful day when the first password you try actually works?
When it's freezing cold outside and toasty as all get out in my shower, my tiny victory is that I turn off the water and get on with my day.
We can't change this big dumb world, but we can celebrate the tiny wins.
So join us on Maximum Fun or wherever you listen to podcasts. Let's get tiny!
Talking with actor and singer Lola Kirk, here's another sample of her music, a song called Monster, off the 2018 album Heart Head West.
What if nothing's right? Nothing ever happens overnight. I shouldn't put a baby face.
I saw an interview with you where they asked what the song Monster was about, and you just said depression, and that was the end of the answer. And I was like, oh my gosh, am I going to get one-word answers for my questions today?
Oh no.
Has that been an issue in your life, depression?
Well, that song is about actually somebody else's depression, not my own.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, absolutely, it's been a theme in my life. I feel like I'm a typically quite like sunny and optimistic person, but I'm very impressionable. I can be kind of, to a fault, a sponge for other people's attitudes and feelings. I'm just beginning actually to come out of what I thought was what felt like a depression for me, and just really see that a lot of that depression was about a kind of illusory reality that I was living in. That I feel like there's an alignment happening, like as of this week. It feels really nice. I know I'm being quite vague about that, but I guess I think I felt depressed because I didn't feel connected to myself for a while. And I'm beginning to like reconnect with myself, whatever the fuck that means, but just like really listen to and value my own experience. And that's something that, you know, I did not get into the habit of doing growing up in a place that was really chaotic and needing other people's stability to feel safe and not having that be present all the time. So I don't know. I feel like I'm just like getting to know myself again, and that it's painful, but it's pretty cool.
Boy, I've got several follow-up questions now.
Yeah.
The depressive episode that you just talked about, when did that start?
A few months ago. I mean, honestly, it started in the wake of putting out an album. It was really difficult. It sucked in a lot of ways. I mean, not because of anything that anyone I was working with did, but just because it's disappointing to, unless you're like the biggest band in the world, like put something out there that you're really proud of and just be like, oh, like it's really hard out there to like stand out. And just feeling really like rejected and down on myself and like not feeling proud of myself at all. I just experienced a lot of like low self-esteem and obsession with work. And that was just like not the experience I wanted to have. And I don't know, I think what you were saying earlier about like, how do you separate yourself from your work and like the Lola Kirk that's like, you know, the real person and like the Lola Kirk that's like the artist idea.
Yeah.
And I don't think I did. And I think that was really hard.
Did the album, was the reception not what you expected, or was it about the quality of the work?
No, I loved the work. I loved the work. I was so excited about it. I think it was the reception, you know? I mean, I wanted to be...
You want to be heard, as you know,
yeah.
if you have you something to heard. Say, you want people to hear it.
And just how impossible that is, and seeing how that's impossible, even when you have like a great label, or even when you have a great album, or even when you, whatever, like, it's just, I don't know. There's a lot of artists right now. There's a lot. And, you know, we live in a streaming culture, which is really confusing. And I think just having like statistics available at all times to both yourself and like your audience, like how many likes you get, how many views you get, how many streams you get, how many, whatever you get, like it's crazy. To be able to like kind of constantly track that. And if you're not creating boundaries with yourself about that tracking, I think it can be totally maddening.
So what happened in the last week or so that kind of pulled you into a better place?
It just was like the fever broke. There was like a fever that I was experiencing, it felt like, about all of this. And I just finally realized like, that's not my shit. Like I think it felt so weird to me to be so preoccupied by it, because I have never been like concerned with how popular I am. I mean, not since I'm a little kid in like fourth grade. Like that wasn't like what I became an artist to do, to be like wildly popular. I mean, I think I would have whitened my teeth and tanned my skin and worked out all the time if that was the kind of artist I wanted to be. But instead I had like hairy armpits when I was 25 and like barefoot at the Golden Globes. Like, I don't think I really, if I look back, I'm like, that's not really who I am. Like there, I just went on tour with my dear friend, Courtney Marie Andrews, who's an incredible singer-songwriter, really one of the greatest. And getting to like watch her and listen to her sing every night for an hour and a half was like a healing balm. I was like reminded of like what it is to be a true artist. And coming back to the States after that experience and just being like, actually, like all I want to do is like get better at my work so that I feel more satisfied, not so that people like me more. And, you know, that is a difficult thing to balance with, you know, wanting to have work, because like there's a certain degree to which you have to like, I don't know. I'm wondering what that balance will be of like how pleasing I have to be to others in order to have a career.
Well, it's funny as you talk about it, I think of acting work of yours that I've seen. And it's the kind of thing too, where I don't always identify who an actor is when I'm watching a movie or TV show. I try as much as possible to say, oh, that's so-and-so character. And I try not to think of the IMDb of this person when I'm mm-hmm. when I'm watching them. And then with you, I'm like, oh, that was her. Oh, that was her. Oh, you know, I went through mm-hmm. some of these things. And I thought about Mozart in the Jungle, and I thought about Mistress America, and I thought about the premise, the TV show, the BJ Novak TV show. And I was thinking about how in all of those, you're playing somebody who's trying to figure out a situation, you know, and you're trying to think, what's the right thing to do here? What's real and what's not real? What's my move? And it's the kind of acting I love, where you can watch somebody think and you kind of are following their thought process.
Thank you. Yeah.
But I wonder if you've gravitated, or if other people have gravitated you towards this kind of archetype of woman trying to make sense of a chaotic world.
Well, yeah, I think it's like the straight man to the kind of character is like, I think what you're saying, it is an archetype. And yeah, I think that is largely how I've lived my life, is being mm-hmm. like, what the hell is happening here? So I'm not surprised that that's how I resonate to people that want to cast me in things. But I want to be the wild one, basically.
Okay.
And I think in music, I get to do that. I get to write my own parts.
We're talking to you now from your home in Nashville, and it strikes me that you're not in New York or LA, that you live in Nashville. Does this indicate that you're heading more towards music than towards acting?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I love the pandemic, obviously, you know, made it so that I didn't have to live in one of the two cities I thought I'd be chained to as an actress. And my partner's in the music business, so we live here. But, and it's just nice. It's just nice to like live. I love New York. LA, not so much, but I really enjoy not living in those two places and getting to have the space and experience a different culture, really.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your plan going forward? You talk about having this sort of fever breaking lately and working on your life, and that's going well. You know, how do you preserve a positive mental state of mind and positive mental health for yourself going forward.
Yeah. I mean, I journal, I meditate, I am in therapy. I you know, take walks and try to be on my phone as little as possible, which is often very difficult. And creatively, I'm just really focused on like writing every day. I'm trying to write every single day right now, write a song or work on some prose that I've been working on and just do it for me and not for someone else.
Hmm. What are you writing about with your prose?
I'm writing about myself, my favorite topic.
Okay. Like a journal kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, I've put a few pieces up like on Medium or Substack or whatever, but they're these kind of like hybrid memoir essays that I've been working on.
Yeah. And then since we've been talking about body image and about weight, are you trying to get yourself into a body other than the one that you have now?
I don't know. I can't really tell. I mean, I want to feel like not bloated, but other than that, I kind of like it. I don't know. It's weird. I feel like there's a part of me when I look in the mirror that's like, you're hot. And there's another part of me that's like, you're not. So I'm trying to figure it out.
Who are those voices coming from?
Oh God. I mean, it's like society. And then like, I don't know. That's really it.
Yeah.
Myself and society.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you know now about mental health that you wish you knew a long time ago?
The thing that's been making me feel so empowered lately is like, I'm only responsible for me. I don't have to feel like guilty. Like I feel like so much of my pain in life was feeling guilty about, you know, other people's well-being. And weirdly, that's been like released. I don't feel guilty right now about putting myself first.
How long did it take you to get to that?
31 years.
Okay. How old are you?
31
years old. Okay. Lola Kirk's latest album is Lady for Sale. Let's enjoy a bit more. This is from Pink Sky.
I stayed away all night. This time I didn't even lose my mind. I didn't even cry. I quit believing lies.
Next time on Depression Mode, Jonathan writes fictional mysteries. But he says we're all trying to solve our own mysteries all the time.
I'm writing a mystery, but it's also this guy trying to figure out his pain. And I guess for me as a human being, that's all our journeys. We're all in a certain amount of pain, and it's what we do with it. We can make things worse, which we often do, you know, for decades of our lives until we finally transform our suffering. If we're lucky, we try to start changing.
Jonathan Ames joins us. If people support our show, we can have a show. If they don't, we can't. Let's keep having a show. If you already support Depression Mode, thank you so much for making this possible. If you haven't yet, no biggie. We can fix that. Just go to MaximumFun.org/join. Find a level that works for you. Select Depression Mode and it will be taken care of. It's just that easy. Be sure to hit subscribe. Give us 5 stars. Write reviews. All that stuff helps get the word out about the show so it can help more people. The Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is available in the United States by calling 988. Or you can call 1-800-273-8255. The Crisis text line, also free and always available. Text HOME to 741-741. Our electric mail address is depressionmode@maximumfun.org. If you're on Facebook, look up our mental health discussion group, Preshies. A lot of good talk going on over there. Our Depression Mode newsletter is on Substack. Search that up. I'm on Twitter @JohnMo. Hi, Credits listeners. If you get a chance, Google Minnesota State Fair and Princess K of the Milky Way. It's this pageant kind of thing where young ladies from around the state have their likenesses carved into 60-pound blocks of butter. You can go to the fair, and I do, and watch the carving take place. The young lady sits in a soundproof, chilled plexiglass booth for 6 to 8 hours while the carving happens. It's one of the weirdest things I've ever seen, and I love it so much. Depression Mode is produced by Gabe Mara. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. We get booking help from Mara Davis. Rhett Miller wrote and performed our theme song, Building Wings.
I'm always falling off of cliffs now, building wings on the way down. I am figuring things out, building wings, building wings, building wings. No one knows the reason, maybe there's no reason, I just keep believing. No one knows the answer, maybe there's no answer, I just keep on dancing.
Hey, this is Danny from Los Angeles. You're doing the best you can, so keep it up.
Depression Mode is a production of Maximum Fun and Papa Chick. I'm John Moe. Bye now.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.